Codename Viper. Deep in the jungles of South America, you're on the mission of your life. And welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
That's it. Just the two of us again.
Oh, yeah.
Not that Joe hates Codename Viper or anything and refused to take part in it. Just one of those situations where you just get the two of us for a nice little more casual episode.
Yeah, it's always just like a bit more sensual. I did forget to adjust my cadence on the introduction. So I think I might have tricked you guys into thinking there was a third person.
I might have even left a little beat in the audio there to make them think Joe was coming, and then he just didn't. But speaking of, you know, being very casual and everything, the Viper guy, is his name Viper? I'm thinking he's the guy whose code name is Viper, right? Codename Viper
is Kenny something, I think.
Oh, okay. So is Viper the code name of like the weapon?
I think it's drugs.
Drugs. Okay, so Viper is like cocaine.
I mean, you've been to some parties, yeah. Like,
okay, great. But this guy, the main character that you play as, I mean, he's incredibly casual. Where does this guy get off not wearing any pants?
I think he's wearing khakis.
Sure, but they're the same color. Okay, I know that the NES has a limited palette, but they're the same color as his face. So therefore, it looks like, if you didn't know any better, it looks like he's just wearing like a green jacket and green boots, and he's just got no pants on, and he just immediately, scene one, he walks right into the, you know, the boss's office, and he's like, you know, I'm here to kick ass, and they're like, put on some pants, and don't show me your ass.
All right, I was gonna say that it gets away with it by having, you know, pant looking textures in the sprite, but if you're looking at it with the intention of seeing bare legs, you will just see bare legs. Like it could just pass as the outlines of you know, thighs.
Yeah, it was not my intention, Sean. I wasn't hoping he wasn't wearing pants. He's just unfortunately not wearing any.
I think there might be some psychological looking to find things going on with how you're viewing him.
Sean, do you think this is how countries actually handle drug cartels? Like on a government level, they find the locations, send one man to take down the seven bases and rescue all the hostages?
I mean, isn't that what the CIA was doing back then? Like, I thought...
One at a time, huh?
Yeah, just, you know... There was that one Contra, right? I don't know much about the history of the three-letter agencies, you know?
Yeah, no, I have no idea, actually. So that was an earnest question. I wasn't trying to be funny or rhetorical. I'm genuinely concerned if this is how our governments handle gigantic drug cartels, specifically located in South America. That's a choice for a setting.
I mean, you got to keep the budget down. Oh, but yeah, the setting. Yeah, this is unique.
Yeah, we don't usually go to South America. This feels like we're on vacation.
Now, was Contra in South America before it went to space?
So that's a great question. I don't know where Contra took place. You're drawing a lot of Contra parallels, so I guess you're trying to let the audience know that this game, Codename Viper, is a like action platforming game, very similar in control to Contra.
Well, okay. I didn't mean to do that. I was more so using Contra in that, like, you know, 70s spec op term. But you're right. I mean, it is a side-scrolling action game. I don't think it really feels like Contra, though.
Looks like Contra takes place in Central America. That's a twist.
Okay, that's close to South America.
So Codename Viper is actually what happens when you die in Contra. That creates a new timeline where Codename Viper happens because basically the cartel was able to move, the alien cartel, of course, was able to move out of Central America and move down to South America.
especially the parts of South America that are just littered with trap doors or like hidden doors. Or like, what do you call those? Like joke doors?
Yeah, I have that as the only thing in my notes for the South American setting is that like South America, where all the rock formations are trick doors. Like, what is this? The Flintstones? What's going on?
It's really funny. Like, so one of the main ways to interact with this game, there's, you know, lots of jumping. There's usually several different like planes of action you can alternate between. But when you're not just shooting left or right or jumping between two different like levels, you're hiding in a trick door, or you're finding damsels in distress tied up on the other side of a trick door. Like, you'd never actually interact with the people that you're rescuing or the things that you're finding, especially, you know, like skeletons. You're just sort of like absentmindedly exposing them to the player, and the character never actually saves anyone. They just accidentally trick the door.
And it's one thing to have that in like the first level with the as I mentioned, you're in like the jungle and these rock formations that you can kind of tell, like, oh, they have like a bit of a carving around them, like I might as well try that out. And that's how you figure out that the hostages, skeletons, or nothing is hidden, power-ups as well, hidden behind them. But then, like, that's actually, when you find out that that's just a part of the gameplay, and no matter what the location, they all have trick doors at every different setting, it's like, oh, it's suddenly not as cool anymore.
And, like, sometimes they look like they kind of belong, like, some of them look like doors, but they always work the same way, you know? It's not a regular door. And we're only talking about it because, yeah, that's really the only other mode of interaction.
You mentioned that Viper might have a name. I don't know if you... did you give a name?
I think it was Kenny.
Okay, it's Mr. Smith. Oh. But maybe in the game, it's short for Kenny. But it's Mr. Smith in the manual here. Controlling Mr. Smith-the Viper. And it has a cool, like, hand-drawn thing of him holding two Uzis, and it just says Mr. Smith in quotation marks. So clearly, that's not his real name or whatever. That's just like his government. Yeah, his government assigned name. This guy's suffering from some like main character syndrome, though, right? Like being the only guy to go down and take down these bases and rescue all these hostages, and then he also has like there's mandatory hostages and there's optional hostages, and that sounds kind of crazy to say out loud.
Well, you know, if you're trying to rescue the president, I mean, that's not what happens in this game, but I imagine, you know, there are games in which you're trying to rescue the president and you may or may not be a bad dude, but one might assume that if an organization has kidnapped the president, then there's likely other hostages around. So one might say that the president is the primary hostage to rescue, you know?
I get it, but I would argue that in this case, where all the sprites kind of look the same, right? We shouldn't leave anybody behind, especially if we're only sending one guy down. It's not like, oh, don't worry, the backup team will come afterwards and kind of like make sure everybody's secure later.
The whole team of backup people come like right after you've cleared, you as one person clear the way.
Yeah, they just kind of like come out after you leave the level. They come down, they go, all right, I'm just gonna tap on some things, find out what's real. They just start knocking on all the rocks, seeing if any trick doors open or anything. I heard there was a trap door in this level.
I appreciate that all of these primary hostages already have like explosives on them, and like, they are giving you their one explosive so that you can get out. I mean, like, with them, I guess, presumably, but they've already got the tool to escape. They just were waiting for your permission.
This is also a game where the enemy colors assign the power level of those enemies. So even though they all kind of look the same without... there are a few exceptions for enemies that use, like, a specific kind of weapon. But for most of the regular soldiers, they just have, like, you know, if they're green, they take two hits. If they're blue, they take three hits, blah, blah, blah. Do you think it's the shirts themselves that give them the power, like that make them, like those shirts were, maybe they had like bulletproof vests underneath them, but the guys who wear the green didn't quite get that.
Well, I think that the real thing going on here is this was a time of rising fashion, you know, and there are many fashions on display, and I think that the wide range of colors in action are just showing that whatever organization that you're fighting up against, they are paying attention to like Prada's releases, and they are paying attention to like what Dolce and Gabbana are doing. You know, like you have to have that sense of fashion.
It's a game of many tropes. You know, the drug cartels in South America, we're just sending down one man to take care of it. The enemies wear different colors for different powers. But the tropes just kind of continue as it goes along. Remember that your goal here is to take down this drug syndicate. And obviously, you know, you're getting clues throughout between the stages. It's really actually funny. You're getting like this letter that doesn't...
written on a loose leaf sheet of paper.
Yeah, written on a loose leaf sheet of paper where it's like, our purpose is blank, 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 as much blank, 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 and blank, 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 it, blank, blank, pay. which I'm being actually more generous with the blanks than you would think. There's a lot more blank in there. And, you know, it doesn't mean anything at first, and you're trying to piece it together and everything. But I don't know. You take one look at the guy that you meet, you know, your boss on the first screen, and it's kind of obvious that he's the bad guy, right? He's wearing like some kind of, you know, Nazi regime hat on.
You can't outright say that with the Nintendo game released in the United States. Like that can't be true. But yeah, there are some contextual clues that might be the twist. And, it, you know, between that and the loose leaf sheet of paper, which just sort of illustrates a very basic understanding of a term of like what a clue is and what constitutes a mystery, they definitely were unique in that they had this kind of story, but they weren't very, there wasn't a lot of nuance.
Yeah, because I'm actually a little confused. Maybe you seem to be an expert in the lore for Codename Viper. So as you're meeting up with the other agents after you complete the level, they're adding words to the loose leaf. Is it a new page? Like, is it a page with, this one actually has just a little bit more information, or did they just remember the specific words and add them in? Is it a code? Is that the code name Viper thing? Like,
no, that's why I'm thinking that this all has to be like an allegory, you know, because like maybe it has to just be more poetic. Like the actual, the words on the loose leaf are maybe a symbol of the actual intel that your very scared spies that you're rescuing have released to you, and that I think that's giving the game way too much credit, though. You know, like I think it's I don't know.
Yeah. All right, look, we're being really tough on the game's story, but only because it's mostly generic, and you can still, you know, have all these issues with it. You likened, or we both did rather, to Contra, but does it control anything like Contra? I would argue that Contra is on the essential games list mostly because of how it controls. Like, yeah, it's cool as hell and everything, but like it also feels good to play Contra. Does it feel good to be Mr. Smith?
I mean, I think it, like, the controls are serviceable. They're tight enough, and I never felt hampered by the controls. I felt hampered by the enemies. Like, the enemies are just always ready for you. And I guess that's part of what these trick doors are for, to, like, kind of give you a breather and you're able to escape and, like, let the enemies reposition. But, like, it doesn't really matter how well you control if the guy that just came in from off screen is already firing a bullet at you.
Yeah, that is a noticeable problem, but I would argue a few more issues with Mr. Smith, okay? Two that are because of him and one that is because of the game. So the first thing is that if the game has platforms, right? I wouldn't describe it as a platformer, but you are jumping and moving around on certain ledges and stuff like that. If you're at the end of a platform and it's more like a ledge where there's another platform directly below, so there's not a pit, but it's like directly below and it's not even that far down. One step onto the lower ledge of that platform causes a frozen drop where you lose all control of Mr. Smith until he falls straight down into the next platform. And that just feels like Atari 2600 to me. Like that, like, why did I lose? Like, there's no momentum to him.
Yeah, I guess I didn't. I definitely notice what you're talking about. I just didn't attribute too much headache to that.
Because it won't be a problem. You're right. Like, because there's no, if you did just fall straight down into a pit, like, that would suck. But for the most part, you would jump if there was a pit. So you wouldn't just walk off the ledge. So it's mostly not a problem, but it does kind of become this weird quirk if you're dealing with enemies and then also get, like, frozen in place because you had to move off the platform to avoid the enemy.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of what caused, you know, developers in general they colloquially call it, like, the Wile E. Coyote time, where they kind of give you, as a player, a split second of grace when you just walk off a platform where it pretends that there is still a platform there below you to jump off of, so that feeling of getting, like, frozen doesn't happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've actually heard as recently as, like, the Spider-Man and God of War games on PlayStation 4 are, like, the developers were like, yeah, we totally do that on purpose. Like, we make you feel more badass than you are, and we save your ass half the time.
Yeah, just, like, those little things that are there to make you feel less dumb. Or that's being forgiving to you. And I guess they just didn't do that here.
Yeah, and then, you know, he has a regular jump, which you can move around with, so that's great news. It's not like when you jump, you just go straight up into the air or whatever, because that'd be just as weird as falling down straight. But if you want the high jump, which you need to get to elevated platforms, that cannot be performed while walking. And that one I kind of understand, right? Like, in real life, you'd probably, you know, want to stay completely still to get the highest jump.
To leap three times your height? Yeah,
right. You want to, like, buckle down on your knees and really plant into the ground so that you can use the ground as a giant trampoline to jump up off of, right?
Well, you don't need to do that because there are little trampolines around in this game, you know?
Yeah, I just never understood, like, in track and field why we run with the high jump, because clearly we'd be jumping it over much higher if we just didn't do the running part.
For the standstill, the jump, I did at least notice that there is at least a little bit of an indication in the character himself. Because if you just hold up, he just looks up, which is, I think, a useful little tell that there is a reason for that. And that is because to hold up and then jump is how you move like that. If he didn't look up when you just held up, it would feel a little bit more goofy.
No, you're right. Yeah, because that would feel very stiff. And there is something about that. Like, you're not going to appreciate that as you're playing the game. But, you know, when you're talking about it on a podcast, you'll recognize that it kind of intuitively helped you. And I think there's a lot of examples of that in great platformers like Mario, Sonic, Crash Bandicoot. Like, you'll notice a lot of those suggestions where they're kind of throwing their body in the directions as you're, even before you're moving them. I think that's what feels so good, specifically about those 3D Mario games, yeah. And then the last one, the gripe I had that isn't necessarily on Mr. Smith, codename Viper, it's the environments with those hidden walls that we talked about, those trick doors, they don't create invincibility. And so while I'm sure that you are able to stay behind those trick doors as long as you want, I didn't hold there indefinitely, but it did seem like I had control over it, so I don't know if it times out. So while you could just wait for the enemy to, you know, not be in the position of your trick door, You know, that's like a, now you got to wait on that. You got to be like, oh shoot, now he's there. So I got to make sure I don't take the hit. And technically, like, you're Mr. Smith, you're behind the wall. You shouldn't know that that guy is in front of you. So you should just take the damage. Shouldn't be able to see that.
My big gripe, I wouldn't call it controls. I would attribute this more to the game itself, but it is the way that your character responds to the environment. It's when you make contact in midair, like when you jump and you're trying to jump over an enemy or jump over fire, but if you jump and then make contact with an enemy, that you're taking damage. But the animation that happens, both on the enemy that you collided with and yourself, almost looks like you've attacked him with, like, a classic, you know, like, Mario jump on head. And then it's not until you've then landed that you realize that you've probably just died. And it only, taking damage like that, you can live and continue to play if you haven't done it before. But I don't think that there's very clear, again, like, telegraphing of whether you've actually died, damaged yourself, or if that's even a thing you should be avoiding.
There's only two weapons in the game. There's the pistol and the automatic machine gun. Is there enough variety there?
I don't know, because, like, there really isn't too much going on in the shooting mechanics anyway. Like, do you think that there would have been an appreciable difference in having, like, a fire-based weapon or, like,
a flamethrower? Yeah, I gotcha.
Maybe okay, flamethrower would be fun.
It'd be fun, right? But I guess that's what I was going for, too, is, like, so the pistol is just your unlimited ammo weapon, right? Like, you'll always have your trusty pistol that never runs out of ammunition, but the automatic machine gun does have a limited amount of ammunition, and therefore, like, while it can fire rapid as, like, your turbo, you have to use it sparingly and for when you really need it. And so I do think that there is a lot there for the switch off between those two weapons. And oddly enough, for a game that's trying to, like, introduce trick doors and, you know, weird platforming in the jungle and stuff like that, there's some level of realism there that you only have these guns and not, like, a beam wave that shoots, like, you know, like, it shoots a arc shot that can hit multiple enemies on different grounds, right? Like, that feels kind of cartoony. So pick one, I suppose. Like, don't give me just a pistol if I'm also going to be going through trick doors, right? Like, one or the other here. And so I think it's just more of an identity crisis for the game. And so I kind of wish that they would have had more fun with the weapons, or maybe introduce some kind of beat-em-up combat as well, so that, like, you know, okay, you have your pistol, your automatic machine gun, and then also, like, you know, when it comes down to it, your fists, and you can do some really cool stuff in close combat.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, even if, because, like, obviously this game is aesthetically going for realistic, but the way that the game actually operates is still very much just, you know, video game logic. I think that if, just going back to the example of, like, jumping on a guy even by accident, and, like, the animation that comes from that, like, let that be, like, oh, if you jump on a guy, you kind of stun him. Like, you don't even have to make that kill him. Make that just be a way to, a different way to interact with the world, and sort of add that to your toolbox. Instead, it's just, here's the two things that you can do, and that's it.
There are 8 stages, but 3 difficulties. You know, the layer to the difficulties is kind of hard to digest in the amount of time that we play the games, but my overall impression was is that the difficulties don't add anything, they just kind of increase the amount of damage and, you know, required for the enemies and stuff like that. So forget about the three choices of difficulty. Is the eight stages, is that enough in 1990 for a game? Did these feel like long levels? Maybe these eight stages are enough to hold you over. Any thoughts there on the length of the game?
I mean, I think the levels are longer than like a typical side scroller, I think. At least physically, maybe not in how fast you can clear them. But there's also enough, there's also enough variety in what these levels look like, I think, to say that I wouldn't feel cheated. And I think having the different difficulties does add some replay value. I'm not saying it adds too much or that this wasn't lazy. But I think having those difficulty levels does like pad it a little bit.
And I think it's important to note, too, that these stages are not, run to the right and just get to the end. You can get to the end of the stage and just be...
You have to backtrack.
You're, like, blocked by, what is it, like, four crates? It's like, this is all that's stopping me? Like, why can't I just go around them?
You need a grenade, Mike.
Yeah, but I feel like there should just be a guy who's just like, you know, no, you have to rescue everybody. Like, somebody should tell you. The manual shouldn't have to tell you. Four crates can't tell you. So something should tell you in game, like, no, you have to rescue the hostage before you can move on. And I think that's what at least adds not any replay value, but adds length to the stages themselves, that you really have to explore every nook and cranny, because it's easy to dodge the enemies and just continue moving right, but that's not the point here. The point is to explore the actual level. And there isn't too much that they did with that there either. I'm trying not to complain or anything.
This is,
but like,
exploration in the same way that like searching your pants pockets for like your phone is exploring. Like, you're just like, you're just trying to comb this level for the one thing that you need to move forward.
Right. And now Capcom only published this game. They didn't make it. But think about the length of the DuckTales levels. And those levels are, you know, small in size, I would argue. Not particularly large. But there's a lot in terms of exploration and optional content.
They're dense.
And different paths you can take. And for a game where you're supposed to try and, like, track down hostages, it's kind of boring that it's just go to the right all the time. Like, because you're just gonna... You're going to see all these trick doors or whatever throughout anyway. And like, they might make them, I don't know, I didn't beat the game. They might make them harder to detect later on or whatever, but they should have made it more about like, no, you really have to like, I don't know. This is a weird example, but there was a Ronald McDonald game on the Sega Genesis where, and there's a lot of things in that game that are like actually surprisingly good. But one thing that's really good about them is that there's so much to do on those stages. And yet, you really don't have to do any of it, right? It's vertically long, it's horizontally long, there's like a surprising amount of collectibles, and yet the game doesn't really care if you do any of it. And here, Codename Viper cares if you do the one thing it's asking you to do, but it's not making it particularly interesting to do that thing.
Yeah, they put in a couple, like, sight gags to make it a little bit more interesting.
What, like the skeletons?
The skeleton and the fact that like your optional hostages, which are really just a way to get, I think, extra lives or extra continues. I can't remember. It's just like, oh, it's the woman or it's the little boy. How they ended up here, I don't know. But yeah, there just isn't enough character in this game to, aside from there inexplicably being zombies, that too, that's a thing, to say that there's a lot going on these levels. It's more so they've put a lot of things to check.
When you finish the game, and you know, there are some cool, I'll call them cutscenes for NES days throughout, with the computer and stuff. I like that, like, you're playing on a console hooked up to a TV, looking at a pixel art computer with like images inside that computer. Like, that's, there's some nice layer of depth there in the game. And so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But after all that's said and done, you're just greeted with like a text epilogue Mr. Smith destroyed the underground drug routes where Commander Jones was involved. However, this does not mean he destroyed the huge syndicate that intended on conquering the world through dealing drugs. Well, that's a downer. Like, well, think about it. It's like saying, like, Mr. Smith destroyed the drug cartel, but he didn't end homelessness. You know, it's like, well, I did the mission, right? Like, it's not on me to... That wasn't the assignment, right? Was, like, stop drugs everywhere?
Well, I think it was more so that they felt a moral responsibility to not allow young people to think that it takes one person to stop drug violence, because really it takes all of us.
They could be going for that, or they could just be teasing a sequel, right?
Where he actually does end drug violence.
Right, like, this is, Codename Viper is just the first entry in the Codename Viper Solid series, where, the Mr. Smith character and the Commander Jones guy are just always at odds with each other.
They're revealed to be clones of each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Real meta shit and stuff like that, and that the drug cartel was actually the video game industry, right? Dealing video games to children. And that, you know, getting them addicted at an early age so that they start playing gacha games on their mobile phones and get their parents' credit cards and rack up huge debts so that the families have to pay the interest to the government, which is owned by the video game industry.
Well, okay. Well, you actually made this even more of a downer now. Like,
I mean, I feel like that's basically what the game told me. I'm not even like, I feel like, yes, you can give me a little bit of a creative writing credit there, but for the most part, that's what the game's epilogue is saying.
I mean, all right, hold on. Let's see what the actual letter is. The letter that you've been collecting words from. Our purpose is to control the whole world by drugs. Supply as much drugs to blank as possible, and he will handle it. Never contact him, even though he can be found at his home in blank. We must execute our top secret plans now. Pay attention to this matter. So, really, I think what the game is saying is that someone will always be there to explicitly stop one person from actually controlling the world, like, hegemonically through drugs. Which I think is a valiant thing to say.
That wasn't the final letter, but I appreciate you, after we've already spoiled it several times, withholding the identity of Commander Jones.
You're right, that isn't. It was blank. It was mostly blank. Sorry. You can continue.
It's okay. No. You really just withheld just the name and that he lives in Beverly Hills.
Oh, Beverly places, Hills.
Which is like, that's just funny that, like, you know, it's not like continued in South America or anything. It's like, you can always find him at his home and Beverly Hills, California. That's where I want to be. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sean. Okay, where was I going with this? Oh, yeah, so there are no sequels. So even though they teased it and everything, there are no sequels. So honestly, you know, if anybody wants to revive the Codename Viper thing, I don't know, Capcom's on a bit of a roll now, right? Like Street Fighter 6, Resident Evil 4, I'm sure they got a new Monster Hunter game in the works. Let's get Codename Viper in there, right? Like, let's remaster that shit and make it more meta and gritty. Or let's just give Mega Man a shot. Like, when is it Mega Man and Castlevania's time again? That's kind of weird that they're not... Those are some of their biggest IPs, and they're not doing anything with them.
I mean, the other thing, the other Mega Man stuff that we've been seeing hasn't been all that, like, great. So maybe they just know it's hard.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree it is hard, but you've got to imagine there's a way to reinvent Mega Man, right? Like, it's kind of like Sonic, right? Nobody actually wants to go back and play Sonic the Hedgehog 1, unless you love retro games. But I'm saying, like, it doesn't quite hold up the same way that, like, fans who love Sonic, even the ones that don't want him to get pregnant, but just the ones who,
I'm sorry,
you know, like, who like the fan fiction and everything, They found a way to make Sonic work both in 3D, 2D. Sonic Mania was great, right? It wasn't just a, you know, like, oh, let's just go back to Sonic the Hedgehog 1. It was introducing new stuff. Mega Man and Castlevania need that. Castlevania already has, like, a bunch of other people have figured it out how to do it the right way. It's like that Bloodstained game, right? That's a Castlevania.
Yeah, that's a Castlevania clone.
Yeah, and that's a good game.
Yeah.
So Mega Man just needs something. Throw him a bone. And then, you know, last week, Sean, I mentioned that, you know, this game was only published by Capcom. It was developed by Arc System Works, and you kind of gave me like a, I don't really care for them or know about them. And I was like, they make those BlazBlue and Guilty Gear fighting games. Do you care now? Do you care now?
I think I've played one Guilty Gear game for maybe an hour.
They're very stylish games. Like they're. I'm not good at fighting games level.
It wasn't even that. I'm thinking of King of Fighters, so I don't think I've played.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, King of Fighters is SNK.
Yeah, I haven't played a single one.
Okay, well, they also made very recently. Very recently is subjective. But in 2017, they made Double Dragon 4.
Oh, okay.
And Double Dragon 1 and 2 are essential games in our book. So Double Dragon 4, the reception, it got a score of 49 out of 100. Okay, damn, I thought it was going to be out of 50. really tough. Okay, IGN gave it a 3.5 out of 10, and they basically give everything at least a 6. So
yeah, so this must be a really rough. Bad game. Yeah.
Right, okay. So Arc System Works, jury's out, I guess, right? Like, they're great at making fighting games, but don't let them touch anything else. So maybe they'll make a Codename Viper fighting game. Actually, has Codename Viper, Mr. Smith, ever shown up in one of the...
Isn't he in Smash Brothers?
Yeah, as a trophy, maybe. we're kind of rambling, so I think we're just going to stop the rambling and move on to our final segment, which is, of course, the Essential Games List. I think I've said a lot of bad things about this game, and it's not really that bad of a game. Like, I feel like because of the rhythm of me and Sean and the groove we were able to get into on this episode, you might think that this is a worse game than it is. It's just a rather unimpressive game all around, and I'm kind of surprised because I'm not saying I heard great things about this game, but keep in mind, Capcom put their name on it. And they're on a roll with NES games. And it did have, it did have a lot of things that I like in other NES games. It's just that when you put in all the flaws that we talked about and the rather uninteresting gameplay loop of finding these hostages, like, I kind of wonder if you just remove the hostage part and just made it about, it's a grueling battle through the jungle and just getting to the end, actually, and making the enemies harder or whatever, if that would have been a more substantial game. I've heard people compare this game to Rolling Thunder, which Namco made, and I don't know if that was...
We definitely haven't played that.
No, we haven't played it, but I can't figure out why we haven't played it, if it was an unlicensed game or something like that. I believe it was unlicensed, so we will never play it, but I'd be curious, is Rolling Thunder the better version of this then, if the games are comparable? Should fans of Codename Viper check out Rolling Thunder? Is that the superior entry? Let us know, but I'll let you know that this is not going on the Essential Games List. Sean?
Okay, I guess that means it's off.
That's how it works when there's only two. It's kind of crazy.
I agree. Like, we really have just focused on negative stuff here. I mean, it is still, I think it's a polished game. The little quirks that we discussed notwithstanding, the cutscene art is very nice. Like, we kind of mentioned the computer, like, after action report thing is cool. Some of the animations are fun. But it's really just like, I appreciate that they were going for this realistic aesthetic, even though they were mixing this realistic aesthetic with very unrealistic things and kind of goofy things, to be honest. There just isn't enough going on. Like, the searching these doors for clues/hostages, it just isn't engaging enough, and the gunfighting, as the more moment to moment gameplay loop, isn't engaging enough for me to say that this is anything beyond like an eh kind of game. So I'm going to put it on the essential ant list.
Nice.
But not the essential games list.
Yeah, no, that's the EEL instead of the EGL. Next week, we'll be playing Conflict. We won't be having a conflict. I don't know. I can't promise that. Yeah, we might fight. Who knows? And then if you're interested in more nostalgia, check out the Nostalgia Bites. That's a special podcast that we do for Patreon subscribers. Patreon.com/nostalgia. And there, for just $5 a month, you get the idea. I've said this how many times? I mean, do you really want me to keep going? Sure. So for $5 a month, you get these Nostalgia Bites episodes. They're fun. They're the Famicom games instead, but not in chronological order, just however the heck I feel like it. In fact, I guess I'm noticing that I am sorting them a little bit alphabetically from time to time, but trust me, that's not the hook. There is no hook. The hook is that you can play these games without knowing any Japanese, as long as you can find the English translations. It used to be a lot more elegant than that, but then we started expanding what it means. So our next game is Fuzzical Fighter. And again, like, is that the name of the game? Or is that just like what it translates into? Because it was never released in North America. So
it definitely, there is no direct translation between Japanese and English for Fuzzical.
Right. I mean, that's just a thing where it either is or it is not.
Yeah.
I should point out that on the box, it literally says Fuzzical Fighter in English. So chances are you might be able to play this one without any Japanese knowledge or knowledge of how to go to romhacking.net and download a .ips file and then patch it using something like, I don't know, multi-patch, or Lunar IPS if you use that too. These are just suggestions. Of course, we don't have a way to give you these utilities. But it's not illegal to mention them at the end of an episode. Not listening.
Somebody's at my door. They're banging.
We should probably wrap this up.
Yeah.